Last week, we brought you part one of our in-depth report on the perception of the ALP being poor financial managers. In part two this week, we hear about the Howard Costello years, as well as Kevin Rudd and Wayne Swan's handling of the 2008 GFC. Tina Quinn has this report.
The year was 1996, and Paul Keating had been Prime Minister for just over 4 years after taking over from Bob Hawke at the end of 1991. And leading Labour to victory in 1993. Revenue was pouring in from a mining boom, inflation was at an all-time low, and Australia's economy had all but recovered after the economic turmoil of the last decade. The 1987 global share market crash had led to a sharp rise in interest rates and house prices in Australia, as well as a resulting surge in debt finance takeovers. "It was the recession we had to have," said the then Treasurer Keating in a poorly timed soundbite that came as people were beginning to lose their jobs, homes, and businesses. While this didn't endear him to his detractors, Keating's reforms did lead the country to recovery. Kerry O'Brien, the former host of Four Corners and the 7:30 Report on the ABC, provides his take on why the Australian electorate voted in the Liberal Party's John Howard as Prime Minister in 1996.
The economy was headed for another boom, in a sense that when it did come out of recession, the growth came on quite strongly, to the extent that Bernie Fraser, who was the Reserve Bank Governor at the time, was forced to put interest rates up again. And this was really what killed the Keating government politically when Howard became opposition leader, I think early 95, going into the 96 election. Howard famously referred to the Keating government recovery as 5 minutes of economic sunshine, because there was this sense abroad that we had only just recovered from the recession and were only just starting to enjoy the benefits of this expected boom. But what followed, of course, was 29 years of growth.
The 7:30 Report's Laura Tingle recalls this period.
The seeds of what happened in 1996 had been sown a long time before. Now, in 1993, the electorate might have wanted to change but were frightened by John Hewson and Fight Back. Paul Keating was politically devastating in running that case about how your life would be ruined by the GST and all sorts of other things. But by 96, Paul Keating had tried to move on to a wider agenda, which included Indigenous rights and the Republic. It was an old government by that point, and I think voters, you know, still resented Paul Keating. It had been a very sluggish return. I mean, you're sort of saying the economy was in reasonable shape by 96, which is true, but it had been a really long, slow road to recovery. So people still held him responsible for that. A lot of people didn't like the social issues he was pursuing. And, of course, by that stage, you had the rise of John Howard's black armband field history and the sort of sense of resentment. There was that coalition slogan which really summed up the dog whistle element of it, which was "for all of us," this idea that Labor was governing for a few specialist groups and not for average punters. So I think all of those things set the scene for John Howard to basically come along and say, "Look, we know that you've had too much reform and you're sick of change and you're sick of being frightened by what's going to happen next. I'm going to just make you comfortable and relaxed." And all the talk about elites and special interest groups was really, really sort of started to be played very hard in the Howard era.
John Howard would go on to appoint Peter Costello to head up his treasury, and so followed 11 years of economic stability within Australia. Costello is largely credited with overseeing a number of economic surpluses. I asked Laura Tingle whether she felt this credit was justified.
No, not really. I mean, they only really cut government spending once, which was in the first budget. A lot of those cuts ultimately didn't survive all that long. One of the few sets of cuts that sort of, you know, which were, if you want to call them reforms, which sort of lasted, were the ones that Amanda Vanstone made to higher education. A lot of the other ones were reversed or, you know, bastardised or modified as John Howard tended to panic as elections came round. It's there in the budget papers that if you're thinking about the budget as a sign of economic management, the Howard Costello period was basically one which, as you say, was marked by this huge surge of funds into government coffers from tax, but very little spending reform of any substance. spending basically just didn't move. And they did do a tax reform in 98, and it was good that somebody finally put a GST in place, but you know, they weakened the capital gains tax. They didn't end up overseeing the removal of state taxes, which they had sort of promised to be part of it. And the GST ended up being a very narrow base because they couldn't get it through the Senate. And I would argue that if they had been sort of more determined or, you know, had been better, had been less contemptuous of the Senate, they probably could have got a much better GST, which would have been fairer with a better compensation package for those who might be affected by it. So overall, I think that they were the beneficiaries of a lot of the reforms of the previous era and of an economy that had started to really take off on the back of this, the growth of China.
Kerry O'Brien offers his perspective.
The underpinnings of the economy that Howard and Costello inherited from Hawke and Keating were fundamentally extremely sound. The big issue that John Howard and Peter Costello used to great effect against Kim Beazley, Simon Crean and the rest was that it was a huge task to return the budget to surplus. But it was Keating who had brought it to surplus in the first place. And as Keating argued, once you got growth going in the economy again, the budget would, as he called it, were back to surplus because the fundamentals of the budget were sound. And I think there was more than a grain of truth in that. Then, of course, they were swamped with this sort of bonanza of royalties from the mining boom as the BHPs and Rio Tintos sold their massive amounts of coal and iron ore to China.
Change would come again in 2007 when the Labor Party's Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister and appointed Wayne Swan to head up his treasury. But another financial crash was on the way. The catastrophic GFC in 2008 sent global economies around the world into recession. One developed economy, however, would somehow avoid this. Australia's. Journalist, political commentator and author George Megalogenis recalls how Rudd and Swan prevented Australia's economy from toppling over.
There were really two steps to it. Massive government intervention in real time towards the end of 2008 into early 2009. And then phase two is when the Chinese economy kicks in for us in the second half of 2009.
Laura Tingle again.
Without a doubt, their go hard, go early, go household strategy of basically putting cash into people's pockets sort of kept the economy ticking over and stopped the really important thing, which is the collapse of confidence. And their first package of measures, I think, was a success. So, you know, people can criticise individual things about, you know, checks to dead people and things. When you're in a crisis, as we've seen in 2020, you basically have to run policy fairly hard and fast and, you know, not look too much at the details.
That was the 7:30's report. Laura Tingle speaking there with Tina Quinn.